I'm a survivor, he thought. You're a liar, his own thoughts replied. It was true. He was a liar. There were people he hadn't been honest with. Susan Fletcher was one of them. There were so many things he hadn't told her, things he was now desperately ashamed of. For years, she'd been his illusion, his living fantasy. He dreamed of her at night. He cried out for her in his sleep. He couldn't help it. She was as brilliant and as beautiful as any woman he could imagine. His wife had tried to be patient, but when she finally met Susan, she immediately lost hope. Bev Strathmore never blamed her husband for his feelings. She tried to endure the pain as long as possible, but recently it had become too much. She'd told him their marriage was ending. Another woman's shadow was no place to spend the rest of her life. Gradually, the sirens lifted Strathmore from his daze. His analytical powers searched for any way out. His mind reluctantly confirmed what his heart had suspected. There was only one true escape, only one solution. Strathmore gazed down at the keyboard and began typing. He didn't bother to turn the monitor so he could see it. His fingers pecked out the words slowly and decisively. Dearest friends, I am taking my life today. This way, no one would ever wonder. There would be no questions. There would be no accusations. He would spell out for the world what had happened. Many had died, but there was still one life to take. Chapter 91. In a cathedral, it is always night. The warmth of the day turns to damp coolness. The traffic is silenced behind thick granite walls. No number of candelabras can illuminate the vast darkness overhead. Shadows fall everywhere. There's only the stained glass high above, filtering the ugliness of the outside world into rays of muted reds and blues. The Seville Cathedral, like all great cathedrals of Europe, is laid out in the shape of a cross. The sanctuary and altar are located just above the midpoint and open downward onto the main sanctuary. Wooden pews fill the vertical axis, a staggering 113 yards from the altar to the base of the cross. To the left and right of the altar, the transept of the cross houses confessionals, sacred tombs, and additional seating. Becker found himself wedged in the middle of a long pew about halfway back. Overhead, in the dizzying empty space, a silver censer the size of a refrigerator swung enormous arcs on a frayed rope, leaving a trail of frankincense. The bells of the Giralda kept ringing, sending low, rumbling shockwaves through the stone. Becker lowered his gaze to the gilded wall behind the altar. He had a lot to be thankful for. He was breathing. He was alive. It was a miracle. As the priest prepared to give the opening prayer, Becker checked his side. There was a red stain on his shirt, but the bleeding had stopped. The wound was small, more of a laceration than a puncture. Becker tucked his shirt back in and craned his neck. Behind him, the doors were cranking shut. He knew if he'd been followed. He was now trapped. The Seville Cathedral had a single functional entrance, a design popularized in the days when churches were used as fortresses, a safe haven against Moorish invasion. With a single entrance, there was only one door to barricade. Now, the single entrance had another function. It ensured all tourists entering the cathedral had purchased a ticket. The 22-foot-high gilded doors slammed with a decisive crash. Becker was sealed in the house of God. He closed his eyes and slid low in his pew. He was the only one in the building not dressed in black. Somewhere, voices began to chant. Toward the back of the church, a figure moved slowly up the side aisle, keeping to the shadows. He had slipped in just before the doors closed. He smiled to himself. The hunt was getting interesting. Becker is here. I can feel it. He moved methodically, one row at a time. Overhead, the frankincense decanter swung its long, lazy arcs. A fine place to die, Houlahot thought. I hope I do as well. Becker knelt on the cold cathedral floor and ducked his head out of sight. The man seated next to him glared down. It was most irregular behavior in the house of God. Enfermo, Becker apologized. Sick. Becker knew he had to stay low. He had glimpsed a familiar silhouette moving up the side aisle. It's him. He's here. Despite being in the middle of an enormous congregation, Becker feared he was an easy target. His khaki blazer was like a roadside flare in the crowd of black. He considered removing it, but the white Oxford shirt underneath was no better. Instead, he huddled lower. The man beside him frowned. Turista, he grunted. Then he whispered, half sarcastically, Llamo un medico? Shall I call a doctor? Becker looked up at the old man's mole-ridden face. No, gracias. Estoy bien. The man gave him an angry look. Pues siéntate. Then sit down. There were scattered shushes around them, and the old man bit his tongue and faced front. Becker closed his eyes and huddled lower, wondering how long the service would last. Becker, raised Protestant, had always had the impression Catholics were long-winded. He prayed it was true. As soon as the service ended, he would be forced to stand and let the others out. In khaki, he was dead. Becker knew he had no choice at the moment. He simply knelt there on the cold stone floor of the great cathedral. Eventually, the old man lost interest. The congregation was standing now, singing a hymn. Becker stayed down. His legs were starting to cramp. There was no room to stretch them. Patience, he thought. Patience. He closed his eyes and took a deep breath. It felt like only minutes later that Becker felt someone kicking him. He looked up. The mole-faced man was standing to his right, waiting impatiently to leave the pew. Becker panicked. He wants to leave already? I'll have to stand up. Becker motioned for the man to step over him. The man could barely control his anger. He grabbed the tails of his black blazer, pulled them down in a huff, and leaned back to reveal the entire row of people waiting to leave. Becker looked left and saw that the woman who had been seated there was gone. The length of pew to his left was empty all the way to the center aisle. The service can't be over. It's impossible. We just got here. But when Becker saw the altar boy at the end of the row and the two single-file lines moving up the center aisle toward the altar, he knew what was happening. Communion, he groaned. The damn Spaniards do it first. Chapter 92. Susan climbed down the ladder into the sublevels. Thick steam was now boiling up around Translator's hull. The catwalks were wet with condensation. She almost fell, her flats providing very little traction. She wondered how much longer Translator would survive. The sirens continued their intermittent warning. The emergency lights spun in 2-second intervals. 3 stories below, the aux generators shook in a taxed whine. Susan knew somewhere at the bottom in the foggy dimness there was a circuit breaker. She sensed time was running out. Upstairs, Strathmore held the Beretta in his hand. He reread his note and laid it on the floor of the room where he was standing. What he was about to do was a cowardly act. There was no doubt. I'm a survivor, he thought. He thought of the virus in the NSA databank. He thought of David Becker in Spain. He thought of his plans for a back door. He had told so many lies. He was guilty of so much. He knew this was the only way to avoid accountability, the only way to avoid the shame. Carefully, he aimed the gun. Then he closed his eyes and pulled the trigger. Susan had only descended 6 flights when she heard the muffled shot. It was far off, barely audible over the generators. She had never heard a gunshot except on television, but she had no doubt what it was. She stopped short, the sound resounding in her ears. In a wave of horror, she feared the worst. She pictured the commander's dreams, the back door in Digital Fortress, the incredible coup it would have been. She pictured the virus in the databank, his failing marriage, that eerie nod he had given her. Her footing faltered. She spun on the landing, grappling for the banister. Commander, no! Susan was momentarily frozen, her mind blank. The echo of the gunshot seemed to drown out the chaos around her. Her mind told her to keep on going, but her legs refused. Commander! An instant later, she found herself stumbling back up the stairs, entirely forgetting the danger around her. She ran blindly, slipping on the slick metal. Above her, the humidity fell like rain. When she reached the ladder and began climbing, she felt herself lifted from below by a tremendous surge of steam that practically jettisoned her through the trapdoor. She rolled onto the crypto floor and felt the cool air wash over her. Her white blouse clung to her body, soaked through. It was dark. Susan paused, trying to get her bearings. The sound of the gunshot was on endless loop in her head. Hot steam billowed up through the trapdoor like gases from a volcano about to explode. Susan cursed herself for leaving the Beretta with Strathmore. She had left it with him, hadn't she? Or was it in Node 3? As her eyes adjusted to the dark, she glanced toward the gaping hole in the Node 3 wall. The glow from the monitors was faint, but in the distance, she could see Hale lying motionless on the floor where she'd left him. There was no sign of Strathmore. Terrified of what she'd find, she turned toward the commander's office. But as she began to move, something registered as strange. She backpedaled a few steps and peered into Node 3 again. In the soft light, she could see Hale's arm. It was not at his side. He was no longer tied like a mummy. His arm was up over his head. He was sprawled backward on the floor. Had he gotten free? There was no movement. Hale was deathly still. Susan gazed up at Strathmore's workstation perched high on the wall. Commander? Silence. Tentatively, she moved toward Node 3. There was an object in Hale's hand. It glimmered in the light of the monitors. Susan moved closer. Closer. Suddenly, she could see what Hale was holding. It was the Beretta. Susan gasped. Following the arch of Hale's arm, her eyes moved to his face. What she saw was grotesque. Half of Greg Hale's head was soaked in blood. The dark stain had spread out across the carpet. Oh my God! Susan staggered backward. It wasn't the commander's shot she'd heard. It was Hale's. As if in a trance, Susan moved toward the body. Apparently Hale had managed to free himself. The printer cables were piled on the floor beside him. I must have left the gun on the couch, she thought. The blood flowing through the hole in his skull looked black in the bluish light. On the floor beside Hale was a piece of paper. Susan went over unsteadily and picked it up. It was a letter. Dearest friends, I am taking my life today in penance for the following sins. In utter disbelief, Susan stared at the suicide note in her hand. She read slowly. It was surreal. So unlike Hale. A laundry list of crimes. He was admitting to everything. Figuring out that N. Dakota was a hoax. Hiring a mercenary to kill Ensai Tankato and take the ring. Pushing Phil Chartrukian. Planning to sell Digital Fortress. Susan reached the final line. She was not prepared for what she read. The letter's final words delivered a numbing blow. Above all, I am truly sorry about David Becker. Forgive me, I was blinded by ambition. As Susan stood trembling over Hale's body, the sound of running footsteps approached behind her. In slow motion, she turned. Strathmore appeared in the broken window, pale and out of breath. He stared down at Hale's body in apparent shock. Oh my God, he said. What happened?